So we've been talking this hour about the new opening between Cuba and the U.S., and we have to mention what might be the single most important issue to many Cubans and Americans, baseball. Baseball. There are rumors that the Baltimore Orioles could play the Boston Red Sox in 2016 in Havana. The Major League Commissioner has said we should expect a game in Cuba next year, but it's not that simple. There are now nearly two dozen Cuban-born players in the major leagues, and they all defected to play here. Havana also has a crumbling baseball infrastructure, which is not ready to handle major league games. So what about that Red Sox-Orioles game in Havana? For a reality check, Charles Monroe Kane sat down with a leading expert on Cuban baseball, Peter Bjarkman.
Former Cuban League star players, Ruzny Castillo, who is now going to be the starting center fielder for Boston this year, was a star player on the national team in Cuba. And then also they just signed this young prospect, Yoan Moncada, who played in the Cuban League. So I think they see this as an attraction in Cuba. This may also be one of the stumbling blocks because so far the Cubans have been very reticent to feature teams. You know, they're putting some games on tape delay on in the weekends in Cuba, some major league games. This is the first time that happened in almost 40, 50 years.
Wow.
But they would not feature any of the Cuban players. So any of the teams like the L.A. Dodgers with Puig or the White Sox with Jose Abreu, those teams were never selected to be on those broadcasts in Cuba. So I think those two teams see having Cuban players that they might generate a special interest within Havana if they play down there. But as I say, this may also be a little bit of a roadblock as far as the Cuban baseball authorities
are. A little bit of a roadblock. Let's break that down. Okay, you can't come to America from Cuba. And if you do, you have to defect. And the Cuban government is not going to let that person back in the country. So they'd have to normalize relations with all the people who have either defected or come into America illegally from Cuba before they can even play a game down there with one of those players, right?
Yes, that's one of the big stumbling blocks here, that the Cuban players have not been allowed freely to leave Cuba. Their baseball is extremely important to them. They see the players as part of a national baseball structure, which, among other things, features a Cuban national team, which wins a lot of very important triumphs for them, propaganda triumphs for them on the international baseball stage.
Right.
So they don't let those players go. And then when the players do leave illegally, defect from the country, either leave from Cuban shores illegally or leave the a national team when it's playing overseas, those players are not welcomed back within the country. And although the stance has softened a little bit in Cuba, and the rhetoric has been toned down a little bit, generally speaking, those players are still considered by the government, not by the Cuban baseball fans, other Cuban baseball players, but by the government as being, we use the word defectors up here, they use the word traitors down there.
I think we should talk about some of the other barriers, because I think they're really important. Infrastructure. What are the barriers of infrastructure for two Major League Baseball teams to play in Havana next year?
There's a real concern about the conditions of the playing field. When the Baltimore Orioles played an exhibition game down there against the Cuban national team back in March of 1999, they had to go through a pretty lengthy process of renovating some of the field conditions at the Latin American Stadium in Havana because it was not up to standards for major league players to play on. They had to put new padding on the outfield wall. They had to regrade the infield and so forth. And Major League Baseball MLB is very concerned about the conditions for their players, and the players union is very concerned about the players not playing on field conditions that aren't up to certain standards.
Now, for most Americans today, right now, when they talk about baseball in Cuba, Puig is the word that comes to their mind. Tell me about him and that story, because it is one of the most incredible stories I've ever heard in sports.
Well, and it's not a unique story, because we've had a number of players now who have defected from Cuba and come to the U.S. Under very similar circumstances. Players who are being smuggled out of Cuba, usually via boat, high-speed boat, either to the Dominican Republic or to Mexico. And very often, the smugglers who were involved in these operations, in the case of Puig, worked for the drug cartels in Mexico.
Jeez.
And in coordination and combination with some apparent crime elements in Miami, they were able to smuggle Puig into Mexico with the promise that they would get a hefty cut of what would obviously be a big major league contract.
How big was this contract again?
Well, eventually he, I believe, signed for $30 or $40 million. I don't remember the exact. I kind of lose track because now in the last 2 years, you've had Abreu sign with the White Sox for $60 million. And then Yasmani Tomas signed with Arizona this past winter for $80
million. God, you can't blame him for defecting.
The money is astronomical.
For listeners who don't know, I mean, there's more to the story. He wasn't just smuggled through a Mexican drug cartel and they took a percentage. I think it was 10% of whatever he would make, which is extremely dodgy, as you can imagine. But he was then extorted by them afterwards, right?
When he got to Mexico, apparently, and he was being held on a small island off the coast of Mexico, he actually was being held a prisoner there by the people who got him off the island until they got their money, and they wanted more than they had originally asked for. And he was apparently then kidnapped by another group in Miami who spirited him away from the original Zeta cartel group and took him under the dark of night to Mexico City, where he eventually found his path into the U.S. and has signed his contract with the Dodgers and so forth. And some of the threats have come from the cartel people who originally had him who never received their money. They got stiffed by another group in Miami. And so there's been some real concerns about the safety of Puig and his family. And so the whole business is very ugly. And this is the unfortunate side of what's happening. You know, in the situation that exists now, Major League Baseball has been able to turn a blind eye to some of this stuff and simply they don't recognize any contracts the players might have in Cuba. So once they leave and find their way to a third country where they can be a free agent, then MLB can kind of just look the other way and sign them to these big bonuses and bring them into the major leagues and kind of ignore the whole backstory of how they got here in the first place.
You go down there all the time. You're a huge Cuban baseball fan. I'm listening to you and I'm wondering, like, what's it like? What's the Cuban League like? What's it like to watch games down there?
Oh, it's fantastic because, from my perspective, because it's really a throwback to watching baseball in a smaller minor league park here in the United States in the 1940s or the 1950s. Now, you're not old enough to remember that, but I actually grew up with that baseball. The stadiums are small. Most of those stadiums seat between 10 and 20,000. There's no commercial advertising in the ballparks. Of course, it's a socialist country. There are electronic scoreboards in most, but not all of those parks. Some of them still have hand-operated scoreboards.
Oh, wow.
But most of them are electronic scoreboards, but with no video, no Diamond Vision, no instant replay on the scoreboards. There's very little in the way of any kind of concession stands within the stadiums. Fans bring in sandwiches, bring in beer, bring in their soda pop and so forth from the outside. But the whole focus is on the baseball game. I mean, fans are there for baseball. It's not an entertainment center. It's not a shopping mall as the major league stadiums are here now. So it's a whole different atmosphere. And Cuban fans are extremely knowledgeable fans. And they love their baseball. It's the only game in town in Cuba. It's much more the national sport there than it is here now, where probably NASCAR and certainly NFL rate way ahead of Major League Baseball as far as a national sporting passion in the United States. So it's a very, very different atmosphere.
All right, then. So back to the question at hand. If all this gets worked out, can Cuba even handle Major League Baseball?
Right now, if we can't put minor league, even double A minor league franchises in many U.S. cities because there's not enough of an economic infrastructure there, television market, corporate box seats for the stadium, et cetera, again, we go back to the issue of a place like Havana, Cuba, where fans are now can afford maybe to pay 12 cents U.S. money to go to a baseball game, where the stadiums are old and rickety and collapsing, where so much of the city infrastructure has to be built. Forget about sports, just the infrastructure of the electrical system, the water system, the bus lines, the streets in the capital city of Havana and so forth. This is a major 5 or 8 or 10 year infrastructure rebuilding project that has yet to start and would certainly have to precede any talk about a professional sports franchise down there. It's just totally unrealistic to talk about that.
So if Memphis couldn't get a professional sports team, Havana's
exactly.
Not getting one.
Exactly. I mean, Lafayette, Indiana would probably have a better shot at it.
Charles Monroe Cain talking with Peter Bjarkman, author of A History of Cuban Baseball and the forthcoming book, Cuba's Baseball Defectors.